Hey everybody, just a heads up, this episode is about sex. And I know that we've talked about sex on other episodes before, but this one goes a little bit deeper. Definitely nothing graphic or explicit, but you might want to put the headphones on for this one or save it for when younger listeners aren't present. Okay, here's the show. And I feel bad because I missed Sam's episode.
Yeah, it was so much fun. You guys got to be mainstays on the show. We should have both of you on the next time. I think that would be fun.
That does sound fun.
We should do some sort of dramatic reading, too.
Oh, yes.
And I'm sure Burgess won't make fun of you guys like he makes fun of me when I read, so.
Yes. I will refrain from being too offensive.
Since when?
Please bless the refreshments to give us strength in our bodies.
Hello, and welcome to Bless the Refreshments, where normal people have normal conversations about the gospel, making it way more fun and interesting to be a member of the church. So, ever wanted to know what it's like when a marriage and family therapist and three guys talk about sex from the view of a 10-year-old girl? I know it's incredibly specific, but if so, you're in luck. Today, we welcome back to the show licensed marriage and family therapist Bonnie Young. She was last on the show for episode 45, talking about scrupulosity. And now she's written a book called Sex Educated, Letters from a Latter-day Saint Therapist to Her Younger Self. The book, as it sounds, is intended for a female audience, but we learned a ton as fathers, friends, and husbands about the journey women go through from developing from kids to adults sexually. It's remarkable. Okay, enough with the intro. Let's get to the episode. Hope you enjoy. Today, we are so excited again to have Bonnie Young back on the show. I will say, Bonnie, that your episode on scrupulosity was our second most listened to episode over all of our episodes. So of 80, you come in at number 79.
Or two.
I'm trying to, yeah, that would be, that's a better way of saying it, isn't it? Yeah.
Second to last.
No, I mean, in terms, if we're ranking, rankings are generally done the other way. I'm sorry. Speaking is tough for me, which is probably bad because, again, I co-host a podcast. But scrupulosity, again, was a great episode. So for those who haven't heard your episode on scrupulosity, I'd love to be able to give you some time to introduce yourself, who you are, what you in your work, and where people can find you.
Okay, cool. Yeah, I'll introduce myself. Hi, I'm Bonnie, born and raised in Issaquah, Washington, near Seattle. And I now live in Cache Valley. I am going to Utah State doing my PhD here in marriage and family therapy. I am two semesters in and I'm already feeling senioritis with that. Although I don't know if it's still called senioritis if you're doing a doctoral program, but whatever you call it.
The most senior, right?
The most senior.
Like. Senior. It's just called super arthritis.
Right.
Arthritis. I'm a mom. I've got two little kids, almost five and almost three. They like played really well today. So I'm like, I could have another one. But most days I'm like really overwhelmed. And I'm a marriage and family therapist. I have a private practice and I work with clients with lots of different concerns ranging from, you know, anxiety and depression to sexual issues, obsessive compulsive disorder and scrupulosity, which, you know, we talked about in the other episode. I'm married to an amazing man who's also a guest on one of your episodes, otherwise known as Lemuel.
A man of many talents.
A man of many talents. He really is.
Ooh, an actor.
An actor, I know.
You're married to an actor.
I know. I'm married to a movie star.
And an editor, apparently.
Yeah, yes, he is. And he is, like, he does not mess around with editing. Some of our biggest fights have been about his feedback, which, you know, he has a gift. He's thorough. Yeah, I think that's my intro.
Great. Excellent. Again, welcome to the show. Again, we will have you on anytime. But again, we're very excited to talk about your new book, because not only are you a marriage and family therapist, you are now an author. And you talked about this. You said, hey, I want to come back on when your book is done. And that was a year ago. Like, I'm so excited to have, like, that we're here.
We made it.
And then we could talk about it. We made it. You made it. We didn't do it.
Yeah, no, it's true. We didn't do anything.
We lived. We went to sleep and woke up 365 times. Tell us about your book and what it's about.
Okay. So my book is called Sex Educated, letters from a Latter-day Saint therapist to her younger self. And it is basically a book that is a collection of letters that I have written to my younger self. Basically everything I wish I would have been taught about becoming a woman, about female sexuality, about how to navigate sex in this really confusing world and kind of discern between goodness and evil when it comes to sex. There's just a lot of confusion. I think most people that I talk to about their sexual education, formal or informal, tell me that like, ooh, they really wish it could have been better. And so that was definitely my experience too. So that's what this book is.
So I'm curious, the format to me is really interesting. What kind of drove the decision to write that way? And how did that kind of impact the voice that you used in writing the message that you crafted?
Yeah, I'm going to pull out my copy real quick to use for reference. So maybe I'll back up a little bit and tell you about like the idea, because that kind of feeds into the format. So Sam and I got married in 2015. And I felt like I was 25, almost 26. I was studying, you know, family studies. I was really kind of deep into sexuality research. And I had read a lot. I had heard a lot. Most of my friends had been married, my family. Like on paper, I felt kind of prepared with like sexual knowledge. And then Sam and I got married and it was like, whoa, like there, I mean, probably everyone feels that way to an extent, but I felt like, wow, even with as much education as I had before marriage, I still felt like, man, there's just so much I wish I could have been told. And of course you can't be prepared for every transition in life, but Sam and I both felt like we would love to create something to help other people not have to have experienced so many, you know, hiccups along the way. And so it started out as like, we want to make a resource for people like us. And so we started working on that. We didn't know if it was going to be a website or a blog, but we were writing and having fun, being creative. We love working on projects together. And then it got to a point where we were writing and Sam turned to me and he's like, Bonnie, this book needs to be for women. This is your book and it needs to be written to women. And so we're writing and it's kind of taken this new direction. And as Sam is the editor that he is, he's saying, Bonnie, like the voice of this book feels really academic, maybe even kind of sterile in some places. And he was like, what if you try writing it in letter format? Like just to kind of play with the voice a little bit. And I was like, okay. And I had been writing a lot of letters at this time. We were living in Spain and I was communicating with a lot of people like on email. And I had been kind of enjoying expressing myself, like writing letters. And so changing the book to letter format, I think, really helped convey a lot of the warmth that I wanted to convey in this book. Mm-hmm. Like I wanted this to feel like I was talking to an older sister or like a really good girlfriend, like someone that you just feel safe with and not judged by and that you can laugh with, but that you can also ask really frank questions to. So that's what made it like in the letter format. And there are 12 letters in total. So 12 chapters, I guess. Starting at age 10, all the way to age 28, which was the age that I was when I stopped writing. So I've been writing this book for a little while because I'm not 28 anymore.
I love that format. I remember writing a letter to my future self once when I was young. I think it was actually like in the MTC. So it was like the most stressed out of my life that I've ever been. And I just remember thinking like how excited I was to meet this person after they'd gone through all these changes and things like that. And really how much I felt like I could use his advice a lot. So I love this idea. I remember thinking, man, I wish I could just talk to this guy and make sure that he's okay.
Yeah.
You know, by the way, I was also told by Tyson to not use this as my therapy session because you're a therapist, because that's what kind of happened last time. So I'm going to try to reel that in.
This is healing for all of us, myself included.
It's true. You know, along the same lines as the format, I thought it was interesting. It probably shouldn't be this way, but I thought it was interesting how kind you were to yourself in the letters, because I think we have a tendency to get down on ourselves or to be critical of ourselves. Was that something you did deliberately, or is that just kind of naturally how you thought about the content?
Tyson, I'm so happy that you felt that come through. I wanted this to feel like I was giving myself a hug and that there was just a lot of grace, you know, because when I was little, like growing up, sex was just so like scary to me. It was so confusing. My parents did the best they could, and my parents are incredible, and I don't fault them. I think we all get to do the best that we know how. But even with their best efforts, like this was something that caused a lot of confusion and heartache, honestly, for me. And so I just have a lot of love for that younger version of myself. And so when I was writing this, of course, I had myself in mind, writing to my younger self. But I'm also, right, at the same time, I'm seeing clients, I'm talking with friends, I'm, you know, raising a daughter. And like those kind of maternal feelings of like wanting to nurture these different people in my life, including myself, I wanted that to come through. I think effective sex education has to be done in the context of warmth and tenderness, frankness and humor too, but like this like really safe setting.
I really felt that. It was especially because you knew, like you told stories, obviously about to yourself, the things that like only you two would know. Like in letter one, you're addressing your 10-year-old self. And it says, like that time a few years ago when your family was having a gospel lesson about chastity and you hid under your ballerina blanket on the brown couch in a family room and cried because you were so uncomfortable. That is the reason these letters are so important to read. Again, I love these stories because, and the way you really talk to yourself, because you and only maybe your family knows that, but that's an experience that really meant a lot to you. And again, I'm referring to your 10-year-old self as the other person. Again, it's really endearing and comes off, like Tyson said, really warm, really compassionate, so that you're able to have this kind of talk, theoretical talk with yourself. And I thought that was great.
I know you wrote it for yourself and it was important to you to write it for other women, but honestly, the part that I loved in it was the power pack.
Because, I was going to say, we got to talk about the power pack. Yeah, for sure.
Because that's something, like I have a daughter as well, and I can't even imagine that kind of confusion, nervousness, shame, all of it that comes along with getting your period for the first time. That's just something that like, it doesn't matter how many stories I hear. It's just as a man, that's just something that we just don't understand, nor do we like plan for. Right. And so I love that story because then it made me more aware of like, okay, like, you know, my daughter, she's almost 10, you know, so it's got to, you know, in a couple of years, like this is going to be happening. So it really like kind of brought it to the front of my mind, you know? So I think that's going to be a really important thing about this book too. It's not just women that are going to gain these treasures of knowledge from it, but I think men, fathers, brothers will gain a lot of great perspective from this. I was wondering which one of these chapters is the hardest to write to yourself. Is there one that stands out particular?
Yeah. Wow. That is such a great question, Burgess. Also, thank you for that. And can I just comment on what you said before I jump into
of course.
The hardest? I'm like, I don't want to talk about it. I don't want to talk about hard things. No. Let me distract us from that question. But I think that men, especially fathers, can be such a powerful influence to help girls be excited to become women. I think that, I don't know if this is every girl's experience, but my experience was just feeling a lot of shame. Like I saw girls get made fun of for having periods. I saw girls being made fun of for wearing bras. Boys at school saying, oh, that's gross, or oh, don't talk about that.
Ew.
Yeah,
that's disgusting.
Yeah.
Yes, for sure.
And I'm not saying like 12-year-old boys necessarily are capable of possessing the mature, or girls are capable of possessing like the maturity that an adult would, of like understanding actually how amazing it is that girls and women menstruate. So there was a lot of shame in that. And there was also a lot of shame about my body changing and becoming a woman, because most of what I saw about women's bodies was objectifying. I was being told to cover up. You know, in media, I was seeing women basically being a collection of curves and that being the most important part of them. And I think like, I just think that fathers and brothers can be such a powerful source of of safety, of even celebration, like of how cool it is that you get to become a woman. I mean, I think a lot of us use humor when we're maybe uncomfortable or don't know what to say, but I think like sometimes humor can hurt a little bit, especially when someone's changing and they're not sure what's going on with their bodies. And I think just like being able to say like, wow, becoming a woman is so amazing. Having that come from a dad like that, or a brother, like, ooh, that would be so powerful. So Burgess, I'm glad that, you know, maybe you reflected a little bit about your role as, you know, how can I help my daughter navigate this?
No, absolutely. I think you bring up a good point. Like I always use humor in uncomfortable situations, but that's in those times where in a very, very vulnerable time, I think kids can pick up on that right away. Mm-hmm. It's like they're being uncomfortable. That's why they're being funny. So I'm making them it becomes very obvious. So I think that's a really good point that we really need to be intentional about that, you know?
Yeah. The world that I want my daughter to grow up in is a world where womanhood and femininity are celebrated. Like I'm already planning her first moon party, which is like, you know, when she gets her first period, like we're going to have a red themed party. I don't know if we're going to play like pin the pad on the girl or like whatever, but we're going to make it fun. We're going to make it playful, but also like honor this huge step in becoming a woman. And I think like the Young Women's Program has done that, like New Beginnings. There's these really cool kind of moments in church, but nothing that's like connected to like our bodies. And I think, I just think that we have in our theology, such a beautiful theology of our bodies. Like our bodies are central to the plan of salvation. We believe that our bodies are going to be with us forever, you know, well, our resurrected bodies, like a spirit in our body are our soul. It's not just our spirit. And I don't know, I just think that that's cool. And the fact that women can create and that we have these cycles, I just feel like, wow, there's so much power to celebrate there.
Well, I also think, like I was talking to my wife, like literally before I jumped on here and we were talking, I was talking about, I just read the chapter about menstruation and about, you know, the shame that came along with that. And I was like, it's really sad how much shame there is around that, because literally half of humankind menstruates every month for a quarter of a month. And I thought, I was tempted to calculate. I was like, how many years have you been menstruating like consecutively? And I'm like, that is great. It's such an amazing feat that women do this every month, and it is solely for so they can grow a living human inside of them.
Yeah.
It's amazing.
Yeah.
I wish I had had that attitude as, again, my friends and sisters were going through this, because and it wasn't even me that I think perpetuated it as much as it was even my sisters and my mom when they're like, ew, sorry, I know this is gross. I'm like, oh yeah, this is gross. So, you know, like I think that even among women have embarrassment and shame on along that as well.
Totally.
And can we first talk about the Power Pack? Like explain what that was, because explain what that is, because it's a great story. And again, the ingenuity and the creativity was amazing.
Oh yeah.
But again, it illustrates an amazing point.
Yeah. I am creative, aren't I?
Amazing.
That's something I've always been. I will leave the explicit details of the Power Pack, which are G-rated. I didn't mean to use explicit in that sense, but maybe to...
You have to read the book.
Spoil the book.
Yeah,
right?
Yeah, but to read the book. No spoilers.
This is a tease for the book.
I
get
a little teaser for you. Is when I had my first period, which was when I was, I think, 12 in sixth grade, I was... Oh, I had very little support and I was really embarrassed, and I didn't want anyone in the entire universe to know that I was menstruating. And so I came up with a very secretive and also genius way to figure out how to take care of my period without anybody knowing. So there you go.
Read the book.
Read the book.
Read the book.
I'm a sleuth. I'm a...
It was very ingenious for sure.
That's awesome.
So I guess let's go back to Burgess's question. Okay. Tell us a little bit about, again, and I'd love to hear, like the most difficult, but I'd also like to know about like your happiest ones or your favorite ones or most important as well.
Yeah. let's start with the difficult ones and then we can move on to happy things. I don't know, Burgess. I haven't thought about that question, but you know, so off the cuff, like as I'm skimming the chapters right here, I think the one that was hardest to write is probably the one that's most meaningful to me right now. And that's the latest letter, which really deals with, and I hope this comes through as I'm like, you know, as people read the book, is like, the title of the book might be a little bit misleading because it says sex educated, as in like, I have arrived, like my education is done. And that is not true. That is not true. It's like such an ongoing process. And the last chapter that I write to myself, the title of that letter is sex educated. And in this chapter, I'm just kind of writing about like, how do I deal with my sexuality right now? Like I'm a mom, I've got two kids. I'm so tired. Well, actually when I was writing this, I was pregnant. There's another level of complexity. I was pregnant. And when I'm pregnant, we were talking about this before we started this show. I'm sick for 9 months and I can't stand the smell of my husband. Like for 9 months, I'm like, oh, it's the worst. He smells great most of the time, but not when I'm pregnant.
I heard Amy when she was pregnant talk that say that about Burgess.
Yeah, my wife is exact same.
Yeah.
Multiple times she'll wake me up in the middle of the night. She's like, you need to go brush your teeth.
Yeah.
Like just like in the middle, you know, yeah. And it's, yeah.
I feel like there's funny. Like a product idea here, like a husband masking smell spray or something like that, that you can.
It's called the couch.
It's like the opposite of pheromones. Like, right, exactly. Like how to not smell like yourself. No, really. I would for be men. Interested in that product. Anyway, I think in this letter, I'm like asking myself, like at this stage of life, I'm tired. My body hurts. We've been married for a while. So like the spark of like the honeymoon, like the novelty, it's worn off. And what do I do now? Now what, you know, I think by this age, like Sam and I had, you know, as hard as we tried, I think I was just shocked that like, wow, we try really hard to have a healthy sexual relationship, but like there's stuff, like there's resentment building. There's like, we have a lot of fights about this. Like, why is this so hard? Like, why does this have to be so hard? And I think that this chapter was me kind of trying to work through that. And I'm like, why does this have to be so central to my life and to life, to creating life, the process of life? And so I would say, because of the fact that there was like so much heartache in that I was working through in writing that chapter, I'd say that's probably the hardest. And, you know, depending on the day, some days I feel like, oh yeah, this is like great. We're doing great. And then some days I'm like, whoa, this is so hard. Like this is so hard. So definitely haven't arrived, but, I'd say like that one was probably the hardest. And I'm guessing a lot of people can relate to that. And as far as like happiest ones or like the ones that I,
what's your favorite?
My like favorite.
Yeah.
Oh man, I have different ones for different reasons. Like there's a chapter that I wrote, a letter, the title of it is You Can Say No. And I love that. You know, when I hear stories about girls' limits, you know, boundaries being pushed, or when I hear stories about coercion or abuse, I'm like, that's when like the fire inside me ignites. And I'm like, this is the chapter that the world needs to read, you know, men and women. Sure. So it's like my, like, oh, my fight one. Mm-hmm. I think like the most maybe foundational one is letter two, which is when I was to myself when I was 12, and it's sex is good. I'd say that's been the most transformative for me, just like at a very basic understanding of like sex. The way that God designed sex, in my opinion, it is so good. And I think it's taken a lot of time for me to like kind of tease out like, what is sex, right? Like, is sex hookups? Is sex casual sex? Is sex purely physical? Does sex include objectifying women? Like, there's so much confusion. I think even inside the church, sometimes we perpetuate some of this confusion, but like getting down to what I believe God believes about sex and wants us to, like, that like as an expression of creativity, as an expression of experiencing pleasure, like God wants us to experience pleasure. I don't know. That just was like really foundational and has been really transformative for me.
Yeah. We actually just did an episode on the New For Strength of Youth.
Oh, no way.
And that chapter, that the letter to, actually reminded me of a section in the Strength for Youth when they say that like sexual feelings are an important part of God's plan to create happy marriages and eternal families. Right. So it's like, I thought that you, what you wrote in that letter was pretty much just explaining that to yourself. Right. And I think it's understanding your bodies is very much a part of realizing how sacred that they are, right? Like the processes that they go through, the pleasure that they get, it's all part of how sacred it is. You know, it's really quite the amazing creation. I think that really comes through in your book. Like it's not just an education. It's not just, you know, conversations, but you really, I think the spirituality part of it really comes through as well.
How sexuality is so multifaceted, right? There's kind of this, there's a physical component, there's a cognitive component, there's a spiritual component, and you go to, into many other things. How do all those things, I think, inform our sexuality as humans?
So I'm going to kind of weave my way toward answering your question, Tyson. Like one of my favorite studies on sexuality was done by a Canadian researcher named Peggy Klein-Platz. I think I said her name right. And she talks about like optimal sexual experiences. So this is not like a religious based research. This is like, you know, sexuality researchers. P.S. Sexuality researchers are a fun bunch of people, if you can imagine. you will experience no judgment in those circles. But in this study, this research team asked people about their optimal sexual experiences. And I really love what they found. And what they found was that people didn't, when it came to optimal sexual experiences, people didn't talk about how their bodies worked. People didn't mention climax or orgasm or these other things that the world deems as like what sex is about. They talked about being authentic, talked about like feeling accepted, talked about being creative, talked about kind of like this soulful union, playfulness. Some people even mentioned like a sense of like experiencing or like tasting the divine, which I think I want to clarify. Like I think some, I used to hear like, oh, sex can be so spiritual. And I used to be like, what? Because I pictured like someone sitting in church feeling the spirit. I was like, how do those things go together? But I think like as I've grown, well, my understanding now is that like sex can be very spiritual in that it is just like the most amazing, complete way that you can connect with another person, like being so vulnerable and being able to be so seen and accepted and then having that reciprocated. It creates something really beautiful. If there is complete commitment, if there's charity, I'd say, between you, like it's like nothing else. Anyway, I really love that study because I think it really points to what sex is supposed to be, which is obviously for procreation, right? We make babies, but also like it can help us develop our souls. It can help us become more. It can help us connect to our partners in a way that we cannot in any other way, in this complete soulful union. But in order for that to happen, there can't just be a focus on the physical. There also has to be a very strong relational and I'd say spiritual, emotional component too. And I think having that multifaceted experience is like the optimal expression of our sexuality. And you know, I'm not saying, I think saying that could set a really high bar that could be kind of discouraging. Right? I don't think this is like an every time kind of thing. I think sometimes sex can be like good enough, you know, but I think if we're meaning it's like, it's not always going to be,
right.
It can't always be, that's just not realistic.
Yeah. Can't always be. Yeah.
Sure. Yeah. Like sometimes, you know,
I'm going to put enough in parentheses after the sex is good chapter.
Good enough.
So I was really fascinated by this chapter as well, because you bring up a lot of good points. As like, sex was a very shameful thing for me when I was young as well, even though I knew I was, this sounds weird, but I was like definitely feeling it very young.
Yeah.
But doesn't I didn't want weird. Anyone to, thank you. But I was like, where does that all come from? And I, a few years ago, I knew that if I like, felt was like, oh, if anyone knew that I was feeling these things, they would feel like I would feel like they would think that I was not as righteous or as strong or as faithful as I would. And I would have been mortified mm-hmm. if people would have known that. What kind of things do you see? You bring up Alma 39, where it talks about how, you know, a lot of our interpretation of the sin next to murder and denying the Holy Ghost is sexual sin. How do you reconcile, again, those types of passages in scripture and this notion that sex is not a shameful thing? Because sometimes I feel like they get kind of squished together.
Yeah. I feel like that is, I feel like shame around sexuality is an inheritance of, how do I want to say this? Like, I don't think that that is built into our theology. I think that we have inherited that from maybe our Christian forefathers and foremothers, right? Who I would say, like, in, you know, there's kind of a long, complicated history with sexuality inside of Christian theology. And I really feel like our sure. theology is like quite different when it comes to sexuality. And so I think in some ways, kind of these false traditions about sexuality have kind of been like imposed on some of our mm-hmm. religious texts. And so we're yeah. reading it through that lens when maybe that's not what, perhaps it wasn't what was intended because of that scripture.
Excellent. What other kind of things do you see? Again, I've heard, you know, lore of the half-eaten cookies or the chewed up gum, like chewed up gum lessons about the law of chastity. I've never heard those before. I've never received them because I assume because I'm a male. And, you know, those weren't as prevalent, but definitely the what was prevalent in our law of chastity lessons as young men is you can't control yourself. You're playing with fire and fire is always dangerous. You have, you know, you can't control yourself. So you have to put yourself on the way other end to make sure that you're okay. You know, like I remember when my mom found out that I had friends that were making out with each other, and she's like, never do that. Mm. And I was like, I'm going to do that. It's like, okay, mom, but I'm going to do it because it looks awesome.
Does it come down to just being like uncomfortable talking about it? You know, is that really kind of what, where the root of this, where the problem is maybe is that it's so uncomfortable that it's easier just to treat it like it's, you know, quote unquote bad, you know, like not talk about it and just kind of like lean on these, like, don't do it, don't do it, don't do it. Is that kind of like where the root of the problem comes from?
I definitely think that's part of it. Like, how much easier is it to say like, no, 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 and then avoid talking about it at all than actually,
right. Yeah.
That's true.
Actually like diving in and talking about like the why. And, you know, one of the things I talk about in my, it's actually not technically a chapter. It's just like my intro letter to the reader is, I have a lot of people come and ask me like, can I have resources to how to teach my children? And I think one thing that I respond with is like, more than any resource I give you, like who you are and the relationship that you have with your own sexuality will probably speak the loudest in what your children will learn about sexuality and how you talk about sexuality. So it's not just what you say, but it's also how you say it, that those messages will really get internalized. So really quick story from my life. I mentioned my parents are incredible. I didn't get very much sex education from my dad, which is fine. He is an incredible father. And you know, I think he might have helped lead that gospel discussion that I was like hiding under my ballerina blanket for. So he tried.
Help me understand the dynamic of your family, where you fit into this while I'm talking. Okay. Are you like youngest and you have teenage siblings? Mm-hmm. Oh, that, yeah.
Yeah.
That, it's hard to tailor a sexual discussion to a girl underneath a ballerina blanket and 16 and 17 year olds.
Exactly. Yeah. So you hit it right on, John. Yeah. I'm the youngest and there's 11 years between me and my oldest sibling. Yeah. So yes. And when I think about, when I go back to young Bonnie and I think about the, what were like the moments when I was taught about sexuality, sorry for my neighbor's loud car, got some drag races going on out there.
Cache Valley is the home of the drag racing. We know that.
Apparently this street is, because it happens a lot. It's the only bad thing about Cache Valley. But I can remember my mom talking a lot about like safety. Like I can remember her talking a lot about protecting myself from people who might hurt me sexually. So she told me stories about when her mom helped protect her. I guess like there was like this weird guy that was coming to their house. And then my mom mentioned something to my grandma, like, oh, he like wanted me to sit on his lap. And my grandma was like, never again. Like that man will never step foot in our house again. And how grateful my mom was that my grandma protected her against like this creepy man. And I remember my mom talking a lot about like how to keep me safe from people taking advantage of me sexually. But that was one of the only things I remember her talking to me about, right? And so one of the messages that I got is like, sex is scary and guys are scary. Like, and I'm not safe. Mm-hmm. Like sex can't be a place where I can really feel safe. And not that like you would communicate that message to a five-year-old. I think you would want to say, you know, in relationships, safe relationships are a place where you don't have to worry about someone hurting you or doing something. You know, I think there's like age appropriate ways to talk about that, but now I'm getting on another tangent. Basically, I told that story to illustrate this idea of like what we're talking about and how we're talking about it really matters. And like the balance that we're giving, right? If the only thing that we're talking about is pornography is bad, pornography is bad, pornography is bad, don't get close to anything sexual. If that's all that kids are hearing about sex, they're going to pick that up, that like sex is bad, sex is scary, sex is off limits. And this message that's so, so wonderful of like the beauty of sex and like this gift of sex, like that's, that will be really hard, I think, to recover for these youth that we're teaching. It's been hard for me. I'll say that.
Well, and what you said is resonated with me a lot, because I remember being a new dad when I had a daughter, it just kicked in. I'm like, how am I going to protect her? And so I don't feel like that's a bad instinct, but I do think you have to know how to deal with it, you know, and you have to know how to have balance with it. And I don't know how to do any of those things. So
I'm with you.
But yeah, so I guess that's the question. We have these natural impulses and we have good desires, but how do we restrain ourselves so that we don't go overboard with those good desires that we have? You know what I mean?
Yeah. You mean like the desires of like protecting our children?
To protect and to safeguard them and to try and keep them in the gospel path and to protect them from sin and those types of things.
Yeah. Oh man, what a good question. I know that the scripture that came to mind was like, I don't know if I'm going to paraphrase here, but like God has not given us the spirit of fear, you know? Yeah. And I think a lot of times, so now I'm like going into my therapist brain, like a lot of times traumatic experiences are really good drivers of teaching by fear, right? So if someone that we've loved has had a traumatic experience, or we've had a traumatic experience, right? Like that trauma will probably really drive and motivate us to make sure that that trauma doesn't repeat or happen again, you know, in some cases. And I think in that case, it's probably a good idea to like maybe do some healing around that, right? Because yes, there can be so much pain caused by sexual abuse or like sexual mistakes, right? Even ones that maybe we choose. I'm making a really clear distinction there between being abused.
Right.
And so, but then I think if we are working really hard on developing like a really healthy relationship with our sexuality, one where we're celebrating and embracing and living in gratitude for our sexuality, I think that that's going to come through too. As I really think it just starts with our own relationship with our bodies, with our sexuality.
Yeah, I agree 100%. We're talking about fear, like teaching out of fear is it's rarely ever will it lead down the right path, you know, or get the result that you're looking for anyway.
But we do it so much, right?
I know. Yeah. That's the thing. But and Tyson, you said something that struck with me. It said, how do we protect them from sin?
Yeah, right.
It's like we're just not going to, right? Because like we're human. So I think you're exactly right. It's like it all starts kind of healing ourselves and creating some sort of a safe environment where when they make a mistake, our kids can be okay coming to us and be like, this happened. I don't know what to do next. Or say like, I want this, but it feels wrong or whatever. Like anything that like, it's just a safe environment that they can talk to us, you know, because we can't protect them from everything, but we can create a safe place, you know?
And nor do I think that, like, when I think of protection, I think of like, I don't know, like protect them from, again, like we're saying from sin, you know, like the imagery that popped up in my head was if, you know, we were in the Garden of Eden and there was the tree and we like tackle them every time they tried to like go near the tree, you know, there's a time and a place where we're not going to be there to protect them. They need to be able to make good choices themselves. If we don't have a great relationship, or if we still have a lot of like negative feelings or scary feelings about our own sexuality, about our kids' sexuality as well, how do we come to terms with like, give us some tips on how we can have a better relationship with that part of ourselves?
I love that question, John. A question that I very much feel like I'm in the process too. like writing this book has been very therapeutic. I want to answer that question. Can I just add another comment to the previous little, right? I don't think that this commentary applies to everyone, but I definitely think it applies to me. And I think it probably will apply to many others, right? Because I think on the one hand, we're worried about our children making a sexual mistake that maybe they won't be able to, that will like really damage them or hurt them spiritually, or maybe they'll get pregnant, right? Like sex does have some like pretty natural consequences that are permanent or can be. But I also think like maybe a little reframe is like, I think it can be very tragic to contribute to a sex education that would not contribute to sexual flourishing for our children. So as a parent, I want to be able to teach my child to follow the law of chastity, to make moral decisions, to have integrity. I also want my child to have a really healthy sexual relationship with themselves and with their spouse. And so I think sometimes we focus so much on like, how do I make it so my child doesn't make a mistake? Sexual, like that's the main focus. But one of my focuses as a mother is also like, how can I help my child like love this part of themselves and celebrate this part of themselves? That feels really important to me because of what I've gone through. So, okay. And now, John, I'll get to your question, which is how can we develop, or like, how can we work on this relationship with our sexual self?
I think that what you were saying, leads perfectly into that. If you're struggling with that, what would we do? What are some advices that you would give?
Yes, I would say, oh man, this is like a big question because there can be so many different reasons why we struggle, right? Like maybe we struggle with our sexuality or our relationship with our sexuality because we feel like our sexuality is a problem. Like there's too much of it. Like we don't know what to do with it. On the other hand, it could be like, I struggle with my sexuality because I have zero sexual feelings or I really resent that. So yeah, I think there's so many different ways that we can come at this, but I would say like really one exercise that I give to clients that I'm working with is, and I don't write about this at all in the book. This is bonus material, is to make a sexual history. And that might seem kind of strange. Maybe you're like, I don't want to write anywhere where anyone else is going to ever see anything about this. So like, use discretion. But I'll encourage my clients to like write down like, okay, the year, how old you were what happened and how it made you feel. Like, what emotion did you feel? And to like spend a lot of time on this. So I'm this old, a movie is playing, my parent makes this comment, I felt embarrassed, or I saw this, I felt excited, I felt confused, right? Being able to kind of like dive in and tune into like what has been my sexual formation, I think can help us have, what's the word I'm looking for? Man, that caffeine that I had before this is like really wearing off. My brain is not working. It can help us have compassion for where we're coming from. I also think it can like bring awareness to like, what is going on? Like, what is my relationship with my sexuality? And one of my favorite quotes is, with awareness comes choice. Like, we can't really choose things. We can't really heal things. Well, I think we're much more effective at healing things that we're aware of. I think that things can get healed that we're not aware of because I think God is great and amazing, and I don't want to put limits on what he can do. But I think it really helps us to be aware of what's going on. And so I would suggest like, deep dive journaling, getting professional help. I think talking about sexuality with a trusted person, but that can be hard because I would say like there's a lot of people with really unhealthy attitudes. Maybe talking about it with your spouse might feel too charged. Like maybe there's too much there. And so, you know, talking with a professional, someone that you trust, someone maybe who's, and I don't know how you'd know this, but, you know, relationship with their sexuality that maybe you want to learn from, or that you think like, wow, like I really like how they live this part of their lives. Again, I don't know how you'd know that. We tend to keep these details secret. In my head, I have like, I have this woman, I've met her a couple times, but there's a woman in my head who I would like to become. And it's a woman who's just like strong in her femininity. She like knows who she is. She loves being a woman and she loves her sexuality. Like she can have fun with it. It's also very much connected to being a mother, and it's not shameful. It's not crude. But it's just like strong and embodied. Like I have this vision, and it's probably like, I don't know, there's like probably some of my young women's leaders that I like imagine, you know, from my youth, like this is who I want to become. And I think like, I don't know, having a vision for like the kind of relationship I want to have with my sexuality, that's been like really powerful for me too. Another thing that's really helped me is going to therapy and working through a lot of this with a therapist. And then also very much including God in my journey, right? Like knowing and feeling in my soul that this is something that God loves and celebrates has been so, so revolutionary for me. And so that's my take.
And how much of those thoughts that you shared with us are kind of, how much of that came out of putting these words on paper? You know, what changed in you in terms of like putting this work together? How has that impacted your views on all these things?
I think I want to caution against an idea that like putting these things on paper means I have like achieved it. It's like so many times when I would go back and edit this, I'd be like editing this chapter and I'm like, oh yeah, I forgot about that. Like I need to remember this, you know?
Right.
But I think maybe what I'm trying to say is like that highlights just the ongoing nature of this. Like, and that's another thing is like with sex, we can think that we like have achieved something and then we get older or we have a baby or our body changes or we get sick. I just feel like our sexuality is meant to teach us different things at different points of our lives. It's meant to like deepen our maturity and our respect for our bodies and for our spouses. I think it's meant to be an ongoing process.
So sex isn't just for 20-year-olds.
Yeah. I hope not.
Yeah, no. And you know, one fun little tidbit is that women tend to have like a peak of orgasmic experience, like greater sexual potential in the physical aspects, like around their midlife, which I think is so cool. Like we don't have to, what's it called? Like something is wasted on youth. My brain is not working. Anyway, there's good things for women in midlife, which is a fun little tidbit.
Well, lastly, is there any part of your specific, like part of your book that you'd like to share with our listeners kind of as we wrap up?
Yeah. I will read my favorite quote, which, okay, responding to your sexuality in virtuous ways often needs to be practiced and learned. And the truth is, most people don't innately know how to do this. This practicing and learning doesn't end once you are married, or once you become a parent, or once kids leave the house. The changes over your whole life, including marriage, parenting, stress, and illness, all require sexual adjusting and growth. Sex is at the center of God's plan precisely because it requires a lifelong commitment to learning and practicing. Only through the pushing and pulling, the balancing of the physical, spiritual, and relational, can we truly find sexual balance. Our heavenly parents want sex to help us become both disciplined and expressive, tempered and erotic, embodied and merciful. There you go.
Love it. It's awesome.
Yeah, that was great.
That was excellent.
I mean, you should definitely read this in an audio, like as an audiobook.
Oh, thank you.
That was really nice. That was, you have a great like reading voice. That was nice.
Thank you.
Great. What will the next chapter of the book be? It seems like this is kind of a living book.
The next chapter of the book will be, I am so tired.
And is Sam writing a companion book for the men's perspective?
He should. Man, he's such a good writer. Yeah, I don't know what our next book will be, but I'm sure he will play an instrumental role in whatever it is.
That's awesome. Excellent. Where will those interested in reading it be able to purchase it?
Yes. Okay, we've got Amazon for paperback and also Kindle. It can also, you can also get it on Barnes and Noble and anywhere that books are sold that has like a website. So let's say you just want to like support local bookshops. If you talk to the bookshop owner or you go onto their website, you can request it. So it can really be purchased anywhere books are sold.
Awesome.
Great. Thank you for coming on the show again.
Yeah.
It was, again, we love our conversations with you. And I know that it's late. So thank you for taking caffeine and staying up with us. So.
Of course. Thanks for having me.
Very All good.
Right. Debrief, guys. What did you guys think?
It was good. She's obviously very candid. She's very passionate about what she, about this book. And it was great. Hearing her experience, hearing her stories.
It's interesting, I think, when an author opens themselves up personally. She's obviously a professional and has clients and has that point of view, but also just, you know, bringing in her own perspective, I think, really kind of humanizes the information, right? This isn't just data being compiled. It's an experience of a person. And reading it, you just get a different feeling from that kind of a perspective than you do from someone that's just saying, oh, I've got, you know, X number of clients that go through this at this stage and, you know, those types of mm-hmm. things. So I liked it from that perspective.
I also like her first chapter kind of a lot. It's just like, look, can we talk? It's kind of like, it's got the feelings like, this is going to be a hard conversation because of the feelings, the lessons you've already learned about sex, you know, the kind of how you've formed it and kind of the anxieties that you've kind of picked up around it as well. But you know, that's where it starts though, like with your kids, to help them develop a good sexual, like relationship with their sexuality comes with talking. I like how she put, you know, she doesn't want to teach her daughter and assuming her son to not just avoid sexual sin, but to do things and to form beliefs to help them flourish sexually.
Right.
It's not about a bunch of don'ts. It's not about, hey, this power is greater than you. It is, it's a part of a fulfilling life and joy and pleasure. Sometimes I feel like we talk about sexual pleasure as being indulgent or not an indulgent, like in a selfish way. Which is not, I don't think is the case. God made our bodies to respond pleasurably for a purpose. And it's not just about to help us have a family. It's about having a full and well-rounded life.
Yeah. And I think that was a theme, right?
Yeah.
So this is kind of what the adversary does. It takes something that is divine and turns it into something base. And I think this effort, and you know, Bonnie's not the only one doing it, but I think she did a really good job of just going back to the divine, right? Going back to the truth, going back to good information. And I think that's the way that we combat the adversary, is just by going back to the truth. And sometimes it's harder to get to, you know, we've all got baggage and we've all got, you know, different experiences and things that might hinder us from doing that. But I just think just the effort put into getting back to what is true and what is good is just really important. And that was really a refreshing conversation. You know, just having that perspective kind of brought back to the forefront, I thought was great.
Are there any parts of the book that you guys want to like that you want to share that, you know, like you felt like spoke to you?
It's interesting that she, like, it makes sense that she said the last chapter was her hardest, because it's like we're reflecting on where she is now. I think it's easier to like take the perspective of I'm taking care of my childhood, like,
my 10-year-old inner child.
Yeah. Right. Like she said, like it's a maternal instinct, right?
Yeah.
I'm taking care of her, but like, it's a lot harder to analyze where you are now. But the reason that the last chapter spoke to me is that, and Bonnie mentioned this, is that it is a process, right? And this is a part of sex that's not talked about a lot, is that it's going to change throughout your marriage. Like, it's going to be different. Our bodies change, situations change, and it's just, and it's okay. It's, if we come at it like it's a ever changing process, it's something we're always going to grow. I think that makes it a lot easier, because sometimes if you think like we've got this and then it changes, it can feel really discouraging.
Yeah.
You know, because it's like, wait, what happened? Like, is our relationship ending? Do we not have the same chemistry we used to? And that's not the case at all. It's just your bodies are changing. So I really like what she said about the last chapter. I understand that it is the hardest, because it's like you just have to come to terms with that. You got to almost relearn it. You know, you got to build upon it again. And so I'm really glad that she included that in her letters. You know?
Yeah, that's a good one. Maybe it's because I didn't. Again, I read it. I started at the beginning and made my way through it. So I haven't made it to that chapter yet. But you bring up a good point. Like, I really like the beginning chapters, because it talks about, it really gave me a perspective of, you know, like what my daughter will go through soon and how to address that. But you're right. It's like, because I want to help her. It's like, but it looking inward for sure. And where I am with my own like sexual journey, like that's hard. And you know, a lot less than I feel like, at least I know a lot less than I feel like than I should. I could do a better job of looking inward. Yeah, you're right. What about you, Tyson?
I liked when she talked about that there's, I'm probably going to mess this up, but she said something to the effect of there's not one right way to have sex. And essentially she's getting into the world portrays that there is this way that you need to have sex in order for it to be valid and those types of things. And she gets into the more nuanced aspects of a sexual relationship, which I thought was really, really interesting. And I love how she tackles how the world portrays sex and how it really distorts it and creates something that's not healthy. And so I really enjoyed that part of it. And there's, I mean, she says it in one particular chapter, but I think she touches on it throughout the book. And so it was kind of a thread that I thought was really helpful. And I think is something that, even though to me, I think at this point in my life is obvious, I think for a lot of young people in particular, it may not be. And so I think it's a good message to drive home.
And I think this is a good conversation to have, even like with ourselves now, like as we, like none of us are spring chickens anymore, right? And it's good to be curious in how we can develop as we go along this journey. And I think that going along with that, the part that I wanted to share in is in chapter one. And it says, here's the thing, whether you are intentional about it or not, every day you're exposed to information that creates some version of sex education. It's unavoidable. So Bonnie, you get to choose. Do you want lunchroom conversations at your school, lyrics from pop songs, or that sexy scene in a movie that teaches you about sex? Or would you rather be taught truths about sex from someone who loves you and who wants you to be happy? And I think that goes to, again, we need intentionality when we as we go along our sexual journeys, like with developing our sexuality. That's what I'm trying to say. You know, like it's much different when I was 16 to when I was 18 to when I was 20, 25, 30. And, you know, like now in my late 30s, you know, it's completely different. I need to be able to be, you know, do I want to just via osmosis absorb what the world is telling me? You know, what is the worth of a man in terms of even in, you know, speaking sexually, you know, or is it something that I need to continue to develop within myself? I need to learn. I need to get better perspectives from myself, what I want, what I believe, what things are good to believe, what things are false that I do believe that are probably not helpful as well. So I don't know. I like that from someone. And I hope that someone, the truths that I'm being taught from someone who loves me is myself first and foremost. So, yeah. And we have arrived.
We have arrived.
All we have arrived.
Do we call it, this is the climax?
This is more the afterglow. We've already hit the climax.
Yeah.
Thanks again for listening. You can find Bonnie's book, Sex Educated, at Amazon or at her website, BonnieYoungCounseling.com. Please go and check it out.
Please let us also get home safely.